Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm Patrick Castillo, and I have the pleasure of introducing you to this summer's Carte Blanche Concerts, Music at Menlo's signature series of artist-curated recitals. Music at Menlo's 2016 season, Russian Reflections, explores the dialogue between Russia and the West, from which a rich tradition of Russian classical music emerged. Each main stage concert program illuminates that tradition by juxtaposing music by Russian composers with works by their Western counterparts. This summer's Carte Blanche Concert Series complements the season-long exploration of Russian music with four all-Russian recital programs. Pianist Alessio Bax presents the first Carte Blanche Concert, The Russian Piano. Carte Blanche Concert 2, The Russian Violin, features the return of violinist Alexander Sitkovetsky, joined by pianist Wu Qian in her Music at Menlo debut. The third program of the series marks another exciting festival debut, as the Kalidor Quartet presents the Russian String Quartet. And the Carte Blanche series concludes with the Russian Cello, performed by Music at Menlo's artistic directors David Finkel and Wu Han. On Sunday, July 17th, celebrated pianist Alessio Bax performs a tour de force program of Russian piano repertoire, exploring European romanticism viewed through the Russian musical tradition. The first half of the program offers music by Alexander Scriabin, alongside works by Modest Mussorgsky and the Viennese violinist Fritz Kreisler, and arrangements by Sergei Rachmaninoff. To conclude the program, Alessio will be joined by his wife and frequent collaborator, Lucille Chung, in Igor Stravinsky's own four-hand piano arrangement of his iconic ballet, Petrushka. Earlier this year, I had a chance to sit with Alessio to discuss his program.
I'm very excited to return to Music at Menlo after a few years of absence, and especially with the Russian program and the Russian theme festival. I've loved Russian music since I was very, very young. I grew up listening to recordings of Rachmaninoff first and then Horowitz and then expanding that to the Russian symphonic literature. And so I've always had a close affinity and love, uninterrupted love for Russian music.
The program begins with Scriabin's Piano Sonata No. 3 in F sharp minor, Opus 23.
Alexander Scriabin is a very interesting figure in music history and in the piano literature. He was a very good pianist, to put it mildly. He wrote some very difficult music for piano that he could play, as has been recorded. But his style varied a lot from early on through his middle life and late. One thinks of three periods of Beethoven, but if you think of how different early Scriabin sounds from late Scriabin, it's quite stunning. Not to say that elements of late Scriabin were not present. I think very often we compare early Scriabin with the music of Chopin, but at the same time, it does not sound like Chopin. It's very Russian and very personal, very different than other Russian composers. The third sonata, which we'll be playing in the Carte Blanche, falls somewhat in the middle. It's very classic in architecture and style, in four movements, but emotionally is anything but classic. It's really, the range of emotion is so vast. In fact, they subtitled it The States of the Soul, and each movement represents a different mood, but it goes much, much deeper than that, and somewhat tragically. Last movement is incredibly difficult. The left hand is moving in arpeggios, very fast arpeggios, stretches of at least a tenth, with, you know, very chromatic notes, and it's quite difficult. And it lasts for the whole movement. And I thought, oh my God, it was already becoming late, crazy Scriabin. I mean, how can you possibly play this? And then I stumbled upon his recording. It was probably, you know, recorded very quickly in one take, and the left hand is just perfect. So he could play it. Consequence of that is that I went back to practice and tried to find ways to make it work. And that's the advantage of pianists, great pianists writing piano music, that no matter how difficult, there's always a way to do it. Rachmaninoff had, you know, huge hands, famously, but he was very considerate. I mean, he wrote for, not for small hands, but wrote for maybe medium to large size hands. So there are ways to make that music work. When every time you find the difficulties, I just tell myself, okay, let me look at it again and see which angle I can approach this with that makes it easier. It's a very, very interesting piece, and I wanted to start the carte blanche with it and then continue with one of my great loves in music, Sergei Rachmaninoff, but seen in a slightly different light as a Rachmaninoff the transcriber. So we'll start with a short piece, Hopak. It's a dance from Mussorgsky's unfinished opera, Sorocinski's Fair. It's a very lively wedding dance that was meant to close the opera, but it somehow never happened. And then two transcriptions of two beautiful waltzes and showpieces for the violin written by Fritz Kreisler, Liebeslied and Liebesfreud. Second half, another piece that I've loved most of my life. The first time I heard it when I was 8 years old, and it's Stravinsky's Petrushka. In the concert, would be played with Lucille Chang, who also happens to be my wife. And it's a version, original version for piano four hands, written by Stravinsky himself. And now I think this is much more than a reduction or a rehearsal score. It really was so careful in how, what to leave out, what to put in, how to put it in, how to share it in between the four hands. It's really a fantastic version. And unlike the solo piano version, which is just parts of the original ballet, it's a complete, so it starts with the first scene and ends with, spoiler alert, the death of Petrushka.
Among the score's many notable characteristics, one is singularly iconic, a tonal device so distinct that it has become known as the Petrushka chord.
Yes, it's a C major and F sharp major chord played at the same time. It's very, very unnerving. But every time Petrushka is in the scene or near a scene, you hear that, and it comes as a fanfare, ba 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 ba, in two keys at the same time. Thank you. biggest challenge is how to bring all these colors and bring this music to life, literally. I mean, it has to sound like a ballet with, you have three main characters and a whole lot more characters that come into play. And Stravinsky is very specific in his score of what happens when. Now, the piano is, in a way, can be a very two-dimensional or even one-dimensional instrument. It's worse and it's best. It can really convey the colors of a whole orchestra and a lot more. We've played this piece for a long time. I mean, I fell in love with it. With the orchestral version, I was 8 years old. And there was a very funny story of how I wanted to play it. I went to the local music store, and when I asked for Petrushka, they looked down at the counter and they couldn't find me. I was so small. And all they had was an orchestral score, pocket score, and this version that was for piano four hands. Often it's played on two pianos just because it's so tricky to to logistically. But I think in four hands works great. And so I went back home. I listened to the recording. I looked at this piece of music. I looked at the transcription and then just closed it. There was nobody crazy enough to play it with me back then, and not again for 20 more years. And then when we first started dating and then playing together, that was the first piece I brought to Lucille. So we started it together. And since then, we've played it, you know, in all the continents. We played on tours of the Trans-Siberian in the winter, of course. It's one must do in so many different places. And so it's become really, I don't want to say a war horse, because it's such a great, so much more than that as a piece. But it's become a symbol of what we do when we play together. It's very tricky because you really have to make it work. You can't just, it's not the kind of piece you can sit down and wing it, sight read it, and have fun with it. Logistically, it's very, very tricky because you just bump into each other a whole lot. I mean, there are times at the beginning when we start working on it. I practice on my own, and then we get together and things don't sound right. And I look down and I see that in between my fifth and fourth finger, there's Lucille's little pinky trying to play notes, and sometimes alternating notes, repeating notes just at the 16th note interval, just one, you know, between the two of us. And so if something's off, it just won't sound. But then, you know, how to create all the colors that we both have in our minds, in our ears, and what to play less, what to play more, what kind of color, how to share one whole color every time. And in the case of the last tableau, Petrushka, where all the different characters and colors come, not one after the other, but they kind of overlap and sometimes happen at the same time, you know, how to prioritize things. It was a very long process, but as you can imagine, that's what attracted us to this piece. It's a whole lot of fun. I think that the last scene, the way it's built up, is incredible, because basically what happens, it's the same square, the same town square, Admiralty Square in St. Petersburg, but that opens the ballet, but this time is a night. So everything is a little bit crazier, a little bit darker, a little bit wilder. You have Mask of the Devils, and the acts at this fair are just really kind of overlap. You have the bear fading out, and then the crowd already starting to make noise. So it starts with full-on noise from the crowd, and then the way it builds up is quite extraordinary. Like, there are so many different characters come in, so it could be easily fragmented, but it's written in such a masterful way that the quiet death of Petrushka again becomes the climax of the whole piece. And there's this part that's always spooked me since I first heard it. That's the last scene when the crowd is gone. You just hear little murmurs here and there. And the magician, the puppeteer, is shocked by the ghost of Petrushka that appears with this very recognizable tune. You have the Petrushka chord, it's a double chord, and he just threatens the puppeteer and curses him, and then just ends with four pizzicatos in pianissimo. As you know, it could have ended with a very big ending, which he being Stravinsky, he also wrote for a concert performance, but that becomes really, the silence becomes the climax of this, most of the time, very big and loud piece.
Audio Notes is authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts on this disc appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations: Scriabin's Piano Sonata No. 3, Mussorgsky's Hopak, and Rachmaninoff's Kreisler transcriptions, performed by Alessio Bax, and Stravinsky's Petrushka, performed by Alessio Bax and Lucille Chung, appear courtesy of Signum Classics. Stravinsky's Suite Italienne, performed by Mihai Marika and Anne-Marie McDermott, and Rachmaninoff's two movements for string quartet, performed by the Escher Quartet, appear courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Desyatnikov's Wie der alte Leiermann, performed by Roman Mintz and Jacob Katznelson, appears courtesy of Quartz Records. Prokofiev's Violin Sonata No. 1, performed by Gidon Kramer and Martha Argerich, and Prokofiev's String Quartet No. 2 and Shostakovich's String Quartet No. 2, performed by the Emerson Quartet, appear courtesy of Deutsche Grammophon. Stravinsky's Three Pieces for String Quartet, performed by the Escher Quartet, appears courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Shostakovich's Cello Sonata, Lara Auerbach's Cello Sonata, and Rachmaninoff's Cello Sonata are performed by David Finkel and Wu Han. Glazunov's Song of the Minstrel, performed by Jamie Walton and the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Ako Kamu, appears courtesy of Hyperion Records. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist-Led.